This honorable court is again in session. Be seated, please. Case number 08-5156, Southeast Alabama Medical Center et al. Appellants versus Michael O. Levitt. Mr. Seagroves for the appellants, Mr. Whitaker for the appellee.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. With the court's permission, I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case was brought by 113 hospitals located in three separate states, those states being Alabama, Louisiana, and Mississippi. The case challenges certain aspects of the Secretary of Health and Human Services regulations for calculating inpatient hospital Medicare reimbursement for two fiscal years. And those two fiscal years are federal fiscal years 2003 and 2004. Rather than launching into a synopsis of the argument, I think it might aid the court just to give some brief background about the structure of how this payment calculation is statutorily required to be made. In 1983, Congress completely scrapped what had been the Medicare reimbursement system in place since 1965. And created what is known as PPS, or the Prospective Payment System. The Prospective Payment System is based upon prospectively determined rates, and those rates are per discharge rates that are not based upon the costs of any.
You know, you might want to get into your argument. I mean, we've read the briefs.
Fine, Your Honor.
Okay, yeah.
There are two mathematical truths for the plaintiff hospitals in this case. The first is that the greater the proportion, and here the proportion, I'm using the statutory phrase from 42 U.S.C. 1395 WWD3, the greater the proportion, the less Medicare reimbursement the hospitals will receive because more of the DRG payment rates are adjusted by the factor, which the Secretary also calls the wage index. The second mathematical truth for the plaintiff hospitals here is that as the factor decreases, so does the hospital's reimbursement. The plaintiff hospitals here have made a number of legal claims attacking the Secretary's regulation. There are two principal legal claims. First and foremost is the Secretary's calculation of the proportion, and in particular his inclusion of certain cost items in that proportion. The statute requires the Secretary to calculate the proportion of, and I quote, hospitals' costs which are attributable to wages and wage-related costs, end quote. We respectfully submit that the Secretary included costs in that cost category that not only did not meet the statutory standard within subsection D, but that did not also meet the Secretary's own definition for those costs. The second area of principal
which is your strongest example of that?
Our strongest example, Your Honor, is postage costs. Uh-huh. We discuss at some length in the briefs the fact that prior to the 2003 fiscal year rule being finalized, the Secretary himself proposed to remove postage costs from the wages and wage-related proportion. Secretary did that in response to a MedPAC report, MedPAC being an advisory commission that consults Congress. The Secretary did that, proposed to do that, I should say, and then 3 months later, in finalizing that fiscal year's rule, for whatever reason, chose not to follow through on his proposal.
And what's the problem with that?
The problem with that, the Secretary was
thinking about doing it one way, decided it to do a different way.
The problem with that, Your Honor, mm-hmm. is that the statutory standard is that the cost to be adjusted by a factor, the only cost to be adjusted by a factor, I should say, are costs that are attributable to a hospital's wages and wage-related costs. I think the Secretary, in reading the briefs, effectively concedes that the Secretary does not have discretion to adjust any other cost category by a wage index. It's only that category of costs that are related to wages. Now, the Secretary's own definition of, at the time in question at least, the Secretary's own definition of the wages and wage-related proportion was, quote, operating costs that are related to, influenced by, or vary with the local labor market. The local labor market there being the key terminology. Now,
is that definition required in any way by this statutory phrase? The secretary's in a later description clarifies that that's one way in which they define it, but not the only way. I don't see anything in the statute that requires that wages can only be considered if they vary locally. In fact, it doesn't really make that much sense because that's the purpose of the second item, the factor.
Well, actually, Your Honor, I think that the answer to your question relates to the second part of the statute, because I think to understand the proportion calculation, one has to step back and look at the entire statutory provision and look at not only what the proportion is doing, what the proportion is defined as.
Does that mean you think it is required by the statute?
Yes,
or
Your
it's
Honor.
Not required by the statute?
I think it is required.
And why do you think it's required?
Because I think that the entire purpose of the statutory provision, when read in its entirety, is to adjust costs, is to adjust a standardized payment rate that as it's first promulgated, does not account for geographic variations in wage levels at all. It's one standard rate. And I think this entire provision is designed to adjust that standardized rate to account for geographic variations in wage levels.
So only wages that vary locally?
Only operating costs, Your Honor, that vary on the basis, of the local labor market.
There's a new statute, right?
There is, Your Honor.
And the new statute makes the proportion a fixed number, 62%?
That's correct.
Do you have any problem with any of the arguments that you're making here? Obviously, they affect you for 0304. Do they affect the new statute in any way?
They do in the following respect. They would any argument that would succeed in changing the calculation of the wage index.
Do you have a problem with what I thought the problem you had with the wage index was that some things which shouldn't have been included in the proportion in the first place were not included in the wage index?
That is correct.
And since they won't be included in the proportion anymore because it's a fixed number, do you still have the problem?
Yes, for the following reason, Your Honor. We say that although we don't believe that those costs, and here we're talking about professional service fees costs and other labor costs, although we believe that those fees shouldn't be in the proportion in the first place, if they're going to be in there, they should be in there as well for the factor.
I understand that, but in the new statute, they're not in the proportion. The proportion is just a fixed number, right? 62%, regardless.
Perhaps I'm not understanding your question. I think the light bulb just went off, Your Honor. I think you are right.
Okay, so you don't have a problem. None of these arguments we're making here, obviously they affect you for the years that you're suing about, but they don't affect you for the future.
Correct.
Okay. Let me ask one other sort of question about the change in the statute. This has to do with the occupational mix.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So in 2000, the statute was amended, right? And it specifically struck the section that you're relying on, the section that says to the extent determined feasible.
That's correct,
right?
Your Honor.
So that from 2000 on, the statute does not include those words anymore.
That's correct.
And instead, it only has a requirement that by fiscal year 04, the survey has to be done.
That's correct.
All right. So I don't understand the argument that with respect to the years we're talking about here, 03, 04, you have any cause of action or any basis or any argument about a violation by the Secretary.
The argument is as follows, Your Honor. As Your Honor explained, but prior to 2003, prior to the year 2000, the statute used a feasibility standard. The Secretary stated, rather, in a Federal Register notice, I believe in the late 90s, that before the statutory change, that if he would start collecting the information to make that occupational mix adjustment, that the Secretary wouldn't be in a position to apply that data until 3 or 6 years down the road. Our position is that when to look at what Congress was doing in repealing that statute.
I understand that your argument is the data would be available.
Correct.
But there's nothing after 2000 that would require him to use it or her to use it, even if it were available, even if it were feasible in 03 and 04. Nothing.
I will concede that it's not the strongest argument in our brief.
All right. Fair enough. So when Judge Tatel asked you for your strongest argument, that was not on the list.
That is a fair character.
All right. Fair enough. Let's see what else. Go ahead. Thank you.
But if we could go back to postage costs, if we can talk about what we think are our strongest arguments, I think it...
Frankly, I understand the postage talk.
Okay.
That one, I would like you to pick your second strongest argument.
Okay. Workers' compensation insurance. Sure. As we point out, particularly in our reply brief, the cost of workers' compensation insurance is not set according to geographic variations in wage levels.
You said particularly in your reply brief, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Did you make that argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah, it is in the opening brief, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
I say particularly.
But workers' compensation is wage related, right? I mean, the costs directly relate to the number of employees and the wages they get paid.
But the cost is set not based. Your Honor is correct. However, right. It is not set based upon the fact that, in theory, it's not set upon that Joe Smith in Dothan, Alabama, gets paid X amount of dollars. It's based upon...
But what in the statute would require that? I mean, wage-related is a pretty broad term.
I would agree.
We view words like that as a pretty broad delegation of authority to the Secretary to interpret it. I mean, it doesn't just say wages. It says wages and wage-related costs. How can you argue that workman compensation payments are not a cost related to wages?
I think
you could make the argument, but why is it unreasonable for the Secretary to have concluded that it is?
If the court looks at the Secretary's own regulatory definition of what that statutory standard means, the court will see that the Secretary, during the fiscal years in question, used a definition that said that the cost in question had to be operating costs that related to or were influenced by the local labor market. And our position is that in looking closer at workers' compensation insurance, for example, the rates for such insurance are typically set on a statewide basis, and they're not, those costs do not, let me give an example that we have in our opening brief, for example.
Your whole argument here turns then on the discussion you were having with Judge Garland, that in your view it has to vary locally.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's your argument about workman's compensation.
So if
you're wrong about that, then do you have any other argument about workman's comp? I mean, if we don't agree with you about that, then...
I'm pausing because I'm thinking.
Yeah, sure.
I don't want to concede that point if I don't have to, of course.
I don't blame you.
I still believe, Your Honor, that if the court looks at subsection, this portion of the statute in its entirety and doesn't myopically focus just on the first clause or two, because it is a run-on sentence. If you look at the...
A run-on sentence?
Yeah, it is a run-on sentence.
It is a run-on sentence.
You're talking about the statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, that's not unusual.
And unfortunately, it's not unusual.
No points off for grammar. We can't do anything with
that. That being said, I think if the court looks, and I think the Supreme Court's precedent about Chevron Step 1 analysis and this court's own precedent, particularly in the County of Los Angeles versus Shalala case, this court has said you don't just look at the one statutory phrase at issue. You look, I think that the analogy used.
But we have to find the whole thing unambiguous. And what you're making an argument about what you think is the purpose of the statute,
mm-hmm.
right, by looking at the whole thing. And that's, you may be right, but that's not unambiguous. The statute doesn't say the purpose of this statute is to do this, and here's the following method by which we do it. You're getting that from a very long run-on sentence, which at least gets us to Chevron 2, don't you think?
Well, if that's the case, I still think that the argument can be made under Chevron Step 2 that if the entire policy reason for this statute is to adjust standardized rates to equitably reimburse.
Okay, so you're back to your local.
Yes.
Locally varied. Okay. Let me ask you about your argument about one of your arguments is that the proportion, the secretary, the inputs for calculating the proportion are different from the factor, right?
Correct.
So let's look at this run-on sentence, or both of them, actually. And you say they're not comparing apples and apples, right?
Correct.
Okay. But the statute isn't cast in terms of apples and apples. It's The proportion is based on an estimate, right?
Yes.
And the factor is based on a survey.
Correct.
Right? So doesn't that suggest that the secretary has the flexibility, given the two different techniques he is supposed to use, to take account of different considerations in each? Isn't it inevitable that when you're doing an estimate, you could consider a broader set of factors than if you're doing a survey?
I would agree with you, Your Honor, that the word estimate does give discretion. I think that the estimate has to be tied to the, has to have a nexus, rather, with the wages and wage-related language in the first part of subsection D. Again, I would agree
You mean the survey? No. They're both wage and wage-related, correct? But one's a survey and one's an estimate.
Correct.
Okay.
Well,
I mean, look, when the census does its decennial survey, right? Its decennial census. Or when it does its intermediate estimates, which it does throughout the process. Obviously, it takes account of factors in the estimate that it doesn't take account of in the survey, just because they're different techniques.
My response to that, Your Honor, is that although I agree with Your Honor that the language of the statute with respect to the proportion uses the word estimate, and the language with respect to the index says based upon a survey, I think the key point in our argument is that the secretary takes the position that although the wage survey has to be on the factor has to be calculated on the basis of that survey, that the secretary has complete discretion to pick and choose what data is included.
Well, she doesn't say that they have complete discretion. They say they don't have the hourly, since the statute refers to hours, they don't have the evidence about hours with respect to the sort of non-direct wages. That's why they've excluded it. It's not just purely discretionary. It's they don't think it's workable.
Which I would say is Exhibit A for why we don't believe that those costs should be included in the proportion.
The proportion doesn't mention, as Judge Tatel said, a survey. It also doesn't mention hours. There are some other differences also. The proportion talks about costs which are attributable to wages and wage-related costs. That word attributable is not with respect to the factor. In addition, the factor says it's to be to reflect the wage level, not wages and wage-related, just wage level, and then later based on a survey, which is wage-related. So we're at least in terms of the text, you're not talking about two completely equivalent definitions. Wrong factors,
right.
With small f.
Your Honor, I think, has correctly identified the language in the statute that suggests, that does support the government's position. I don't know if I can answer Your Honor's question any better than I've done already and we've done in our briefs.
Okay.
All right. We'll give you a couple minutes to reply. Mr. Whitaker.
May it please the Court. Henry Whitaker on behalf of the Secretary of Health and Human Services. In 1983, Congress did change a lot about the way Medicare reimbursements work for inpatient hospitals. But one thing it didn't change is the way the Secretary adjusts Medicare reimbursements for area variations in hospital wages. And what Congress did in 1983 was, in effect, carry over the Secretary's prior administrative practice.
Even the way you just said that, why doesn't that fit with what your opponent says, that it's an adjustment for area differences, and therefore only things that adjust by area differences should be considered?
If you're referring to what should be included in the wage-related proportion, it was true under our prior administrative practice that we included all the elements, all the elements that were included in the wage-related proportion in FY03 and 04. Were also included in that, in the analogous proportion.
No, I'm asking, he said that the things that go into proportion should only be things that vary locally.
Yes.
And there are things in the proportion that do not vary locally. Is that right? Or do you disagree with that? I had the impression the government's position was we don't have to use that definition. Not that everything in the proportion does vary locally.
Well, there may be things that vary locally in the proportion. I don't think that the Secretary has ever conducted a comprehensive analysis of which particular costs in the proportion do vary and don't vary, although it has, of course, excluded some at least one cost because it does vary. But there's certainly no...
It doesn't vary. You're talking about postage?
Now? Yeah. But there's certainly no unambiguous requirement on the face of the statute
What about the argument he made in the first words out of your mouth, which were that the purpose of this is to make a adjustment on area differences? So their argument is the purpose of this is to look at things that vary locally, and you have some things in the proportion that don't vary locally.
Well, I agree that is the general purpose of the adjustment, but the wage-related proportion and the wage index are essentially two different moving parts that work together to accomplish that purpose. And essentially, I think what the wage-related proportion is doing is defining the universe of wages and wage-related costs that are to be adjusted by the wage index, which reflects variations in wages. And as Your Honor indicated, I think, in a question to my opponent, the function of adjusting for those area variations is performed by the wage index and is reflected in the various wage indices we assign to each geographic area.
I think the Secretary could include in the proportion, I don't know, something that is labor-related, a wage, but is set nationally, say, by a national union agreement. Would that be includable in the proportion?
Yes, I think the Secretary would have statutory authority to include that in the proportion. And it may be and I think as Judge Tatel indicated, the language of what the Secretary may include in the proportion fairly exudes a high degree of deference to the Secretary and is quite broad. It is a, quote, estimate of the hospital's costs that are, quote, attributable to wages and wage-related costs. So certainly that would be within the Secretary's statutory authority.
Has the Secretary changed the definition so that at one point it was things that vary locally and now that's only one of the factors? Or is your view that that's always been that the definition's been more inclusive?
I think it's fair to say, Judge Garland, that the formulation has changed somewhat, and we have certainly stated the definition in different terms, but the basic definition, I think, has remained constant over the years. As we clarified in FY06, in that passage that you referred to, where we made clear that what is included in the proportion, the wage-related proportion, are hospitals' costs that are wages and wage-related costs. And how we define that is to include two principal elements, wages and supplemental forms of compensation, and secondarily, labor-intensive services that are purchased by hospitals. And so that basic definition, I think, has remained relatively constant over the years.
Can we talk about postage then? This seems to be your greatest area of difficulty.
Certainly, Your Honor.
What is the theory about postage? That most of the post offices costs are the mailmen? Is that the theory?
Well, yeah, I don't think that the Secretary has ever had occasion to address, let me back up a second, it's certainly the case that we included postage in the wage-related share because we classified it as labor-intensive.
Yeah, but on what basis?
Well, postage has been included in the labor-related share since the very beginning.
Not an explanation. That's just a description of fact. You're saying it's always done that way, so we're doing it that way.
I thought you included it because it was labor-intensive. Isn't that the reason?
Yes, what I was trying to say. But I guess what I'm also trying to say is that the Secretary has never had occasion to flesh that out in the kind of detailed analysis that I think Judge Garland is talking about. That's true. But it's also true that the plaintiffs in this case, and I'm not aware of any other hospital, has ever asked for such an analysis, and I don't understand them to be challenging our inclusion of postage in the wage-related share on that basis as this case comes before the court, what they're they
not,
say.
I thought that that's what they were arguing
most
in,
of
their,
that,
in their blue brief.
Part of their brief.
It's what? Short, but it's two sentences, which says you can't do this.
Well, what they say is that we can't do it because it doesn't vary, because this, there's
no, they
some,
say it's not wage-related. They say it violates the statute.
Well,
it's not a wage-related cost.
But what they say is that it's not wage-related because, and the reason for saying it's not wage-related is because they claim there's an unambiguous statutory requirement that only things that vary on a local basis are wage-related.
What does make it wage-related?
Well, again, Your Honor, I'm not in the position here to...
But you are in the position here because the government, the secretary has to have a basis for the decision. So what is the basis for the conclusion, for example, that postage is labor-intensive and the steel used in construction is not, or the grapes served in the cafeteria are not, or... I understand the argument that part of the purpose of this section, or at least your analysis, is to not disfavor a decision by a hospital to contract out services. So whether the physician is employed by the hospital or whether the hospital contracts out for the services or whether the attorney is employed by the hospital or whether the attorney contracts out, but I don't, that can't be the argument for mail. You're not going to hire people to deliver your mail to Texas. So what is the theory that makes postage and not a million other things labor intensive?
Well, I think the theory that supports why it was lawful for the secretary to include postage based on his prior consistent classification of postage as labor intensive is that it was that classification, to my knowledge, was not challenged in the 2003 and 2004 rulemaking proceedings and is not at...
Oh, and
is,
so you're saying they didn't raise this issue in the 2003? They only raised it on appeal here?
Well, my understanding is that is true, Your Honor.
I didn't see that argument in your brief. Your argument is this is waived.
Well, right? We did say in our brief, though, that they apparently do not challenge the conclusion that it is labor intensive, and I think that is absolutely true. So I don't think the court needs to reach whether
they have two arguments. Am I right? They only have two sentences, right, on this in their brief, and the sentence has two arguments in it. One is that they invoke the 05 rulemaking, correct?
They do.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, and they say it doesn't vary based on local wages. So your point is they don't really argue in that section, in those two sentences, that it isn't labor intensive, right?
Right, and I think that it was... So
what about the 05 rulemaking? What's your response to that?
Well, my response to that is simply because the secretary, in the exercise of interstitial interpretive discretion, excludes certain costs that do not vary on a local basis, does not mean that his statutory authority on the face of the statute is limited to adjusting only those costs that vary on a local basis. But I think that more than just waiver, the Secretary's statutory authority is also clearly supported by the fact that Congress enacted the PPS statute and the wage adjustment statute against the backdrop of the Secretary's practice of including postage. And that, and the court presumes that...
Could you just explain that? Before PPS, what was it included in?
It was included in a category of costs called other miscellaneous expenses. And later rulemakings, the secretary broke that up into a more detailed set of costs. I don't think that there's any dispute in this case that we definitely used to include postage, and that Congress did enact the statute.
PPS totally changed. You changed everything.
It did change a lot of things, Judge Garland, about the system. But it didn't change the fundamental way that the Secretary adjusted the reimbursements for area differences in wages. And so I think based that similarity, and it's not just based on legislative history, the Supreme Court has articulated a presumption that when Congress enacts a statute against the backdrop of an administrative practice, then the court presumes that at a minimum...
Do you need to be correct about this argument to prevail here?
I don't believe we do, actually, Judge Tatel. I think that even if the court were to conclude that the secretary did not have statutory authority to include postage.
No, that wasn't my question. Oh. My question was, do we need to accept your argument about prior administrative practice for you to prevail? I thought your argument was that under the statute itself, this was a reasonable interpretation of the statute, what the secretary is doing, regardless of what it did, what he did prior to PPS.
It is, Judge Tatel. We definitely rely on both of those arguments. But alternatively, if the court were to rule.
I don't want to get to the alternative yet. I don't understand the answer to Judge Tatel's question. In what way is postage labor intensive? That's what I asked you before. What makes it labor intensive?
Well, again, I don't have a view, and we have no position on what kind of detailed analysis might support that postage is or is not labor, labor intensive in that sense.
I'm asking you what makes it labor intensive. You first answered it was always done that way. I understand that. Now I'm asking you for a second explanation. The answer can't be I don't have a detailed analysis. I'm not any analysis. What makes it labor intensive?
Judge Garland, I don't know the answer to your question.
Okay. And it's not reflected anywhere in the Secretary's Federal Register or other statements. There's no standard by which they've determined that postage is labor intensive.
Well, I don't think that that's actually accurate because I think that the prior administrative practice certainly
I understand that one. I just want you to set that aside. I'm not saying you win or lose that one, but I want to hear what the other argument is. Leaving aside prior practice, there is no other explanation.
Well, I think also we would rely on the fact, too, as I mentioned before, of the point that it doesn't appear to have been challenged.
And it is challenged in the briefs. I mean, the title of the argument is postage costs are not wage-related, and do not vary by local wage levels. That's their argument.
Well, actually, but that is their argument. But in their reply brief, however, you will also note that they say on page
8 and 9.
There you go. Assuming arguendo bottom page 8, second arguendo that postage is a labor-intensive cost,
then they go on and say, all right, what basis the secretary has for picking and choosing among them so-called labor-intensive costs when deciding what to include and what not to include.
Well,
what is the basis for picking between different? I mean, if you mean by labor-intensive the fact that a completely separate entity, which the hospital could never replicate or do in-house, that entity's costs are labor-intensive, there are likely lots of such entities. And you have to give some idea as to why you pick post offices and not, I don't know, something else.
Well,
waterworks, the electricity company, the gas company, anything else
that might be
labor intensive.
No, I think it's somewhat more narrow than that, Judge Garland. I think that the labor intensive, setting aside postage for the moment, a given cost is labor intensive, not simply based on whether the hospital could theoretically provide it in-house or not. Instead, the question is whether the cost predominantly consists of wages. And that test is much more limited than simply whether wages are sort of an incidental component in some element of the supply chain.
There's nothing in the record at all that says that the post office's percentage of costs based on wages are higher than or lower than any other set of things.
I'm not aware of that, and I'm also not aware of any information in the record that the hospitals have provided that would suggest to the contrary. So in the absence of any kind of empirical information on that, I think
So does that mean your argument is that anything, no matter how far distant from hospital, actual things that a hospital might do, if a hospital buys anything where the inputs to that anything are labor-intensive, that that can be counted? So if, for example, it turns out that the steel in the supports for the building that actually costs more, you know, that it costs, oh, I don't know, cars, for example. The hospital buys a car, buys an ambulance, and it turns out that it buys an American ambulance. An American ambulance, most of the costs of American ambulance, as we've learned recently, are a consequence of wages and various wage-related costs. That the costs of the ambulances purchased are covered, are included in the proportion?
No.
Why not? Why is it different than postage?
Well, again, I'm sorry to beyond postage, I can't give you any more comfort than I've already provided on that. But as for
distinguish ambulances from postage.
Well, I think we don't know the answer to that question, Judge Garland, because the agency has never looked at it, to my knowledge. And I think that in the absence of some kind of empirical evidence challenging that conclusion or some, you know, comment where somebody says, look, it's not labor intensive.
Right. I thought their argument was that if you go so far as to include something like labor, like postage, then you're including everything. Are you telling me they didn't make this argument below? That's a very good administrative law argument. Are you saying that there's nowhere in the comments where they raise this point?
Well, Judge Garland, I regret that, you know, in all candor, I can't say that I have reviewed each and every comment in the quite extensive comments to those rulemakings. I have reviewed many of them.
You haven't found it.
And I haven't found a place where they have done that.
I can ask the other side. They only have to review a few because only the ones they actually filed.
I'm kind of interested in hearing the answer myself. So, but I certainly don't think that, again, the kind of judgments that you're talking about are very complex empirical, you know, it's a complex empirical questions that I think in this context, you know, the court should defer to the way that the agency has resolved these very complex and technical.
I'm happy to defer if you could tell me why they resolved it, other than that they did. Normally, we ask for some reason, just that they did it.
And the reason, Judge Garland, I think deals with the history of the development of the wage index, and it's more than just that we've always done it. There was a rule in 1990 where we responded to comments saying that you know, various things should be excluded from the labor share. And we did give the explanation that those inputs, including postage, should be included because they are labor intensive. And on the state of the record currently, I think that explanation is sufficient.
And that was before the statute changed, is that what you're saying?
What do you mean by what?
I'm sorry, when you said we're including postage, and you said that in the 90s. Is that before PPS? Is that what you mean?
No, that wasn't before PPS. No, it wasn't. We were excluding postage. PPS was enacted in 1983, and we were including postage before 1983, which I think is strong, if not decisive, evidence that the Secretary does have statutory authority to include postage. But you also asked me whether we've given any other explanation for it. And we did say in 1990 that it was included because it was labor intensive.
But no further explanation. Though.
There was no further explanation, Judge Garland. That was the extent of the explanation. And again, we have excluded it on a prospective basis. You know, so postage is no longer a problem. And even if the court...
Do we know why you excluded it? I mean, can we figure out, if we can't figure out why you included it, can we figure out why you excluded it?
We certainly can, Judge Henderson, and that's in the FY06 rulemaking.
And what does it say as to why you excluded it?
Yes, and the reason why we did exclude it is that while we don't use this as the exclusive or conclusive factor in deciding whether something is wage-related, we do use whether something varies, whether an input varies on a local basis as an element. And what we said in FY06 was postage actually does not vary on a local basis. So as a matter of policy.
Revelation, isn't it?
Well, I think it's fair to say, though, that it's not something that the agency really ever had occasion to consider in any depth before the rulemakings in question here. So,
I just have one more question. The argument that I cut you off on, which was your next argument, which I take it be this budget neutrality argument.
Well,
actually, not your next argument.
No, that was not going to be my next argument, actually, Judge Garland. Although I'm happy to talk about that on postage. Just one more thing on postage, and if the court did find that there was some problem with the Secretary's statutory authority for including postage, I still think that would not be a ground for reversal because, again, and I go back to the language of the wage-related share, it is an estimate of hospitals' costs that are attributable to wages and wage-related costs. And remember, postage, we're talking about 0.272% of the share.
There isn't a de minimis exception to the right of somebody to appeal for more money, right? If you think it's a small amount of money, they don't.
Well, I think there is in this sense, in that there is a harmless error doctrine under the APA. Well,
the amount of money they're talking about doesn't sound like it's harmless. People sue here for relatively small amounts of money.
Sure, absolutely, Judge Garland. But I think it would be harmless in this sense, in that when we're talking about a statutory provision that requires an estimate of the share, such a minor error, I think, would not mean that the Secretary exceeded his statutory authority in, quote, estimating the share. If the only way the share would change would be 0.272%. And there is a harmless error doctrine under the APA, and I think in the context of that specific provision, which is a necessarily imprecise calculation, that still would not be a reversible error on postage alone.
Okay, let me ask you about your budget neutrality argument. Does
Certainly.
That apply to postage? The title of your budget neutrality argument is, the court cannot grant plaintiffs a remedy of reimbursement based on their contention that the Secretary miscalculated the wage index. I take it postage was never in the wage index, right?
Well, the budget neutrality argument would, and perhaps that heading should have been more, made it more.
I'm right, it's not in the wage index, right?
It's not in the wage index, okay. That's good, Judge
Cohen. Right,
but I think the budget neutrality considerations go to any type of claim for reimbursement.
So your argument is that as long as their appeal is delayed past the end of the fiscal year, you can do anything you want and can never be corrected?
Certainly not, Judge Garland. We don't have an ultimate position on what the agency would do in the event that the court were to find some kind of error. Our submission is simply that if the court finds an error, and we don't think it erred, it should simply remand to the agency.
That's the meaning of your last sentence. It's unclear how the agency could practically.
Yes.
You're not saying that this is a ground, a showstopper. It's just something that requires a remand.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And just to make clear that the court should not order reimbursement outright. And
I understand.
All right, wrap it up.
I'm happy to answer any other questions on
there aren't any.
The wage
Wrap
question.
It up.
So if there's no further questions, I would ask that the district court's judgment be affirmed.
All right. You're out of time. Why don't you take 2 minutes?
Out of your 2 minutes, could you answer the question of whether you raise and how or and where we can see how you raised the postage argument in the comments?
I don't have with me, Your Honor, the actual comments that were submitted, for example, by the Alabama Hospital Association. I will gladly submit that as a 28-J submission if the court prefers. I can point the court to page 149A in the supplemental joint appendix that was filed last week. And that, in the first bullet point in the middle of that page, and again, it's 149A, very first bullet point says that the labor component includes postage and other costs which are not wage or wage related. So that this is on our request for expedited judicial review.
Right, but that's before the Provider Reimbursement Review Board.
Correct. Right?
And you're actually challenging a regulation.
Correct.
And I think to be fair to the government here, this has to be raised during the, and you agree with that, it has to have been raised before the regulation. You can't wait to challenge it later.
I don't know if I do agree with that. In this context, when the Secretary proposed the regulation for the first fiscal year in question, he said he was getting rid of postage. How are they supposed to submit comments that, or are they supposed to say, yeah, we agree with that? Is that, whenever a private party agrees with something the agency is going to do, and they do they have to protect themselves by filing comments saying we agree with that, and just in case the agency changes its mind? I would also say, Your Honor was about to ask a question.
That's true for 2003 and 2004, you had no reason to think the postage might be included in either?
It is true with respect to at least 2003. Where the secretary himself.
But even when they propose doing that, you have to know that that's only proposals, and somebody's going to come in on the other side, and somebody's going to come on. You do have to make an argument one way or the other.
I don't know, Your Honor.
Whether you did make the argument, is what you're saying.
Fair enough, I do not, and I don't know if as a matter of law that we would have to. At a more basic level, I think they've waived this argument themselves, because I don't remember it in any of the briefs in the district court or any of the briefs in this court, that an argument that we waived the postage cost issue by not submitting comments.
They say they don't understand you to be challenging that it's labor intensive. They did make that argument.
As Judge Tatel, I believe, pointed out, there is language in our brief that I believe is fairly clear that we do.
Oh, I was actually going to ask you about that because, in your opening brief, I read the brief as you making two arguments. You only have two sentences on this subject, right? In the opening brief?
That's correct.
Okay, so that sentence makes two arguments. One is you invoke the 05 rulemaking, right?
Correct.
And second, you say they don't vary based on local wage levels. But where in that two sentences do you say that postage is not labor intensive?
Well, reading the sentences right now, Your Honor, I do not see the word labor intensive.
Right. You're not there. So you don't make this argument in this court. That's why I asked you before whether you have anything other than your varying by local area argument on this.
I think an argument can be made, Your Honor, that in the two sentences that you're referring to, and as I understand them, there are 25 and 26 of the blue brief, we say that the...
Why don't you just read that first sentence? The first sentence. The first sentence has both arguments in it.
As demonstrated by the Secretary's own 2005 rulemaking, mm-hmm. postage costs are
right,
not...
There's your 05,
correct.
Right? Postage costs,
costs are not costs attributable to, quote, wages and wage-related costs, and there we're quoting the language of the statute.
Yeah, keep going.
Nor do they vary based on local wage levels, which is, again, a reference to the Secretary's own regulatory standard.
Uh-huh. And where in that do you find... So your argument is that the reference to the statute, wage and wage-related, raises the question that postage is not labor-intensive?
Yes, uh-huh. Your Honor. I think
really? Okay. That's it, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay. Would the court like a 28J letter on the comments, or I just want to make sure that I understand the...
I actually sort of would, yeah.
Would you like it?
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.